difficult day. It's Yom HaZikaron. By this time already in Israel, people are celebrating Yom HaTzmaut. Yom HaZikaron is a challenging day. It's a day in which, for anybody who's been in Israel this time of year, knows that it's the most roller coaster time of emotion, and that today all of the military cemeteries are visited, and seeing both little children draped over graves and older mothers draped over graves and weeping, very, very powerful. And it's an interesting juxtaposition because Yom HaShoah was last week, and Yom HaShoah is in a sense very much connected to Yom HaZikaron. And the old adage has been, that the difference between 23,000 and 6 million is the state of Israel. Very powerful statement. But on the other hand, the two are experientially extremely different. One of them is a studying about the history of horror and the history of xenophobia and the history of genocide and the wide swath of murder that went on. And Yom HaZikaron is a very different experience. It's, in a sense, much more personal and much more direct. Because you're walking on land that is sanctified because these people gave their lives to redeem it. And you're living a life of freedom and a living life of prosperity now, Baruch Hashem, in a country which is only what it is because, there was that great sacrifice.
Also able to fight back the other's way.
Right. And Yom HaZikaron, in a sense, is a moment of pride because although we mourn the loss of almost 25,000 people, actually over 25,000 include the victims of terror, nonetheless, it's a loss that carries with it a pride of that, they died essentially defending our country, and they died as free people to liberate the land and to protect the land. On the other hand, when you take a look at the Shoah, the world is always, we've always been very comfortable with the Shoah psychologically, which is why Israel, for instance, the full name of the day is not Yom HaShoah, it's Yom HaShoah V'Gvura. And it was focused around rebellion, it was focused around those people who fought back, and lots of different reasons for why that's the case, but they're two very, very different experiences. And yet there's obviously something very strong that links them, is that these people died for one reason, they died because they're Jewish. Whether as just targeted victims or as people who their life on the line to ensure that other Jews could live. So it's their memory that we honor. And I just want to start here, then maybe we'll take a little break to get some food. But it is, I just want to tell you, just one little vignette is that many, many years ago when I was a student in Israel in Yeshiva, my parents led a tour to Israel. They did that often, led a tour to Israel. And often the people that they would lead on tour were members of my father's synagogue, many of whom had very little experience with Israel. And I remember one time I came to Lod. It used to be called Lod. Now it's not Bag. I came to the airport when Ben Gurion was still alive, which is called Lod. And I met the plane at the airport and got on the bus with them and went with them to Yerushalayim at the, at the beginning of their tour. And it was around this time of year. I think they came in a few months ago. And I always liked it because my father would stop the tour bus at the first spot that you could see Yerushalayim and then read Tehillim there. It was a beautiful kind of thing. And I remember being on the bus and being with somebody who was a very, very close friend of my father, a very influential guy in the shul, who had never been to Israel. I was surprised. A very wealthy guy, very involved, but had never been to Israel. And he was remarking, because on the road, on Road 1, especially the way Road 1 used to be, now it's much wider, there are lots of memorials along the way. There's, of course, the half tracks, and there's Maleach Hamisha, and there's Bab El Wad, and there's all these places where there's memorials. And he was commenting to me about that. He said, it seems, and sort of the way he said it was, it seems like it's a country built on graves. And I said, yes, it's a young, living country built on ancient graves. And that's a big part of what Israel is very deep ancient history and very young, vibrant reality. And it's interesting that Yom HaTzmaut, and I don't think there's anything intentional about this, it's interesting that Yom HaTzmaut almost always comes out around the parshiot of Acharei Mot and Kedoshim. And you think about what that means. Acharei Mot is describing the death of Nadav and Avihu, about which Moshe said, Bikrovai Kadesh. God is sanctified through those who are close to him, but they became sanctified through their death. And the next parsha is Kedoshim Tihyu, live holy. And that Eretz Yisrael really is very much about that. Medinat Yisrael is very much about that. A constant recognition of how old we are, constantly finding new, not only new artifacts, new cities that were there from 3,000 years ago, and finding more and more about our history underground. In the meantime, while building Startup Nation and most progressive, et cetera, and the only democracy in the Middle East, et cetera, all that we all know about. So it's interesting that Parsha Kedoshim, which is a poster Parsha, right? It's one of the Parsha that you can get a lot of bumper stickers from. Obviously, V'ahavta v'echa kamocha, but Kedoshim Tihyu, and how to call it, Nei Seva Takum, which is on all the buses. You know, lots of posters in here. Also has a very direct reference to not only the covenant of the land, but something about the land, and that's the first pasuk on the page. Ki tavo el ha'aretz, it's the middle of chapter 19. V'chi tavo el ha'aretz asher unatem kol etz ma'achal. When you come to the land and you plant all manner of fruit-bearing trees, va'araltem or lato et piryo, you should sort of cover up the fruit and keep it sort of discreet. For 3 years it's discreet and you don't need it. That's called orla, and only in the fourth year it is then treated holy like maaser, called netta revai, and then the fifth year it's just regular and you can eat it. Now the Midrash has a very interesting take on this piece, because the piece seems like a perfectly legalistic statement that just says when you plant trees, the rule of trees is that the fruit for the first 3 years is prohibited to you. The Midrash says the following: Zeshamar katuv. So this pasuk, how can I recognize you among all of my children and give you a choice land? What does that have to do with this pasuk? Mashal melech shayulo pilagshim. This, of course, is something very difficult to teach, because every mashal, midrash, always a king and his kids and the princess and the queen, etc. But a king has all sorts of concubines. Vayulo banim habe, he had a lot of kids through the concubines. Vayalo ben achad mimatrona achat. Matrona sounds like a terrible word. It's a matron, is not a word we like to use. But the idea was it was like a proper wife. And he had one son. Vayamacha bevoyo termidai. He loved him too much, as it were. He loved him over much. Natana melachachod neapi lagshim sadotu chramim. He gave all of the children of the concubines fields and vineyards. And then he gave his that one son one field, but all of his provisions came from that field. Shalach ben v'amar l'aviv. We'll see why he says all the provisions come there. So the son sent a message. He said, "Levnei pilagshim natata sadotu chramim. All of them you gave fields and vineyards. Natata pardes echad. You gave me one orchard. Amar le'amelach hayecha kol kilarin shelim in pardes hazehayali." He said, "What do you mean? All of my provisions come from that orchard," meaning that's the orchard that I prize more than anything else. One little orchard where all my provisions come from. I love you more than all of your brothers, therefore I gave that to you. Here's the nimshal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara umot haolam, created the nations. Kamar shenemar, shishim heima malachot. Now where's that pasuk from? There are 60 queens. It's a pasuk from Shir Hashirim. We're going to see why Shir Hashirim is so central here. Elu ha'umot, achati yonati, but my beloved is only one, that's Knesset Yisrael. V'chilek ha'kadosh baruch hu l'umot ha'olam sadot u'chramim. He gave them all fields and vineyards. Shtemar b'hanchel al yon goyim, God gave the world to everybody. He gave every nation their place. V'natan lahem li'Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. What do we give us? Eretz Yisrael. Kilarin shel hakadosh baruch hu. That's God's provisions. What does that mean? So korbanot mimena, all korbanot are animals that are grown in Eretz Yisrael. Lechem apanim mimena, that's from wheat in Eretz Yisrael. Habikurim mimena, the bikurim come from fruit of Eretz Yisrael. Omer mimena, and these are halachot, that these things have to come from Eretz Yisrael. Kol atovot sheba olam mimena, all the good things in the world come from there. And something, by the way, in our generation we're starting to see again. V'chol kach lama, all of this is done for one reason, to distinguish this son from all of the others. So there's this special relationship that we have with Eretz Yisrael, which is a reflection of the special relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu favored us by giving us this beautiful land. Now, when we talk about a love relationship, when we talk about a close instinctual tie, there is one book in Tanakh that immediately draws our attention, and that is Shir HaShirim. What is Shir HaShirim about? We studied it at Biyun a few years ago, but Shir HaShirim is a love song purportedly between a shepherd king and a princess, and it has been understood in our tradition in various ways, including I am soon getting a copy of a commentary of one of the Rishonim who actually read it literally, interpreted it as literally about a guy and a girl, which is quite unusual. The reason that it had such a difficult time getting its way into Tanakh, that Rabbi Akiva had to fight for its existence, was because you're reading it straight up, it doesn't look so holy. But it's either understood to be a love song between God and the individual, God and the Jewish people. There's a lot of Jewish history that's in there. When we see Kol Dodi Medaleg Al Ha'arim, my beloved is skipping on the mountains, and I see Lee, and I'm reminded of this. I'm going to remind you of this story. Is Chazal say that's referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming and skipping quickly to come and redeem us from Mitzrayim. That so many of the things that mentioned in Shir HaShirim allude to different components and events in Jewish history that are significant. I'm going to remind you, because back in the day, before we all went to programs and went away, and when you were living on Canfield, I remember coming to your house for Shabbat Pesach lunch. And how long did that lunch take? It took all day. Saying all of Shir HaShirim. All of Shir HaShirim.
You do the Shir HaShirim thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it was gorgeous. We sang all the old tunes, or tunes I didn't know. And I don't want to say more because I'm going to start crying. But it was really beautiful. And you look at Shir HaShirim, and Shir HaShirim, what is the story about? So it's understood, again, in various ways as a mashal. But what plays out in the story? What plays out in the story is about an unrequited relationship, a relationship that actually never fits together. And the very last line of all of Shir HaShirim is Brach Dodi. She says to him, run away, like come back some later time. The key line that operates within the song, which shows up three times, but in different formats, two other times, it shows up a lot, is Hishbati etchem benot Yerushalayim. The girl says to her friends, I've made you take an oath not to push the relationship before it's ready, which of course midrashically is very famous, that gave rise to the famous Agadah at the end of Masechet Ketubot of the three oaths. That there's three different times that it says Hishbati etchem, and that God made the Jewish people take an oath that they would not push the Geula too fast, that they would not come as an army to invade Israel, and that became the focal point around the whole dispute with Sutmer about Zionism. Was kind of revolved around that text. It wasn't about that text, it was about other things, but that was sort of the excuse.
What do you mean no army to invade Israel? Did they conquer Canaan?
No, that after, when we were exiled, we were then took an oath not to invade as an army. Right. So there's all sorts of ways in which Shir HaShirim plays in with that particular kind of relationship, but it's a relationship, again, that's never realized, never fulfilled. But there's something very powerful, as if it's inviting that a relationship which can be tempered, like a passion, that it can be tempered like that by saying, it's not time, we're not ready, is a relationship that's not going to happen. There has to be a breakthrough moment of saying, I don't care anymore, I'm going. So it's an interesting thing. When you take a look at Shir HaShirim, you'll see the following. Take a look in the description here, which is at the end of Perek Aleph, meaning Perek Bet. By the way, the division of Shir HaShirim into chapters is the best proof of how bad the division of the Bible into chapters is. It's terrible. Where they divide the chapters in Shir HaShirim is a disaster. in the middle of ideas, in the middle of a song, in the middle of pouring one's heart out.
Who did the dividing?
The English churchmen in the 1205. So, you know, that's why we stick with our parshiot and we go from there. But you notice that in the song, and I'll read these psukim, that there is so much earthiness, but earthiness with very clear geographic markers. Hinach yafa ra'ati, hinach yafa inaych yonim, hinach yafa duli afraim afarsenu ra'anana, korot batenu arazim rahitenu barotim. And take a look in English. You see that the description is very earthy. It's very outdoorsy, and it's about nature. Ani chavatzalet ha-sharon, shoshanat ha-amakim, k'shoshana b'nachochim, k'enur ayati b'nabanot. כתפוח בעצי היער, כן דודי בן הבנים, בצילו חימדתי וישבתי, פי יום התוק לחיקי. הביאני על בית היין, ודגלו עליי אהבה. סמכוני בעשישות, רבדוני בתפוחים, כי חולת אהבה אני. שמאלו תחת ראשי ונות תחבקני. And then השבעתי אתכם בנות ירושלים, בצבאות ובעילות השדה. So this is, again, referring to the field. תאירים תאורת אהבה עד שתחפץ. And then kol dodi hineza bamidale galarim kabetz al gvaot, and it's all very outdoorsy, but a lot of outdoors sort of thing. But take a look at how Chazal deal with this oath. Besides the famous midrash about it, take a look at source 4, and the midrash zuta of Shir Hashirim, which is an add-on midrash Shir Hashirim. Shpatachem Yerushalayim, ezuhi ahava. What's the ahava? Zo Yerushalayim. Meaning, it's the love itself for Yerushalayim. Sharmar Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael banitim et Beit Hamikdash v'charev lo tivnu od ad shetishmu kol min hashamayim. In other words, what's that love? That love is Yerushalayim. And don't push the love till it's time, is as if saying, don't rebuild until it's time. But the point, not so much of the restraint, but that the focal point of this love affair is a love affair with the city and with the land. All right? And you see it in several of the other sources that you have below. But, and perhaps most famously, and this very much hits not only to the events of the day, but the events of the last week, meaning of the what we're commemorating this whole week, is there's a scene that is a dramatic and very telling scene. We talk about not about just saying the heck with it, I'm going to go for it, and not being so restrained, is the inverse of that, of over-restraint, that we see in the middle, the beginning of chapter 5. There's this gorgeous scene just before it, which is like an invitation to a wedding. Bati legani achuti chala. And afterwards, she tells the following story. Ani yishena v'libi er. I'm sleeping, but my heart is still awake. I'm thinking about the guy. I'm so in love with the guy. Kol dodi dofek. And then what do I hear? I hear him knocking on the door. Now, if you're that excited, you can't sleep. What? Exactly. If you're so excited, you can't sleep. And then there he is knocking on the door. What are you going to do? You're going to want to open the door. Pitchilion. He says, Achoti rayati yonati tamati. Open the door for me, my beloved. Shiroshinim latal kfutzotai v'siselai lamint. I've been outside all night. I've been waiting. My head is full of dew from the morning. It's the end of the night. And she says, Pashatit kutanti echachal bashana. I've already taken my clothes off. I'm not going to get dressed. Rachatzir raglai echatan fem. I've already washed my feet. I'm not going to get them dirty again with the mud. I can't get out of bed. It's such a colossal slap in the face after all of this passion. Said, yeah, but I'm already in bed. I've already done my push-ups, whatever. Dodi shalach yado menachor. Now, what did he do? So he pulled out. He pulled out from the door. Umayai hamu'alav. And then suddenly, my kishkas went after. Suddenly, I realized this longing for it. But it was a little late.
Go back to
shalach yado menachor, which means he pulled his hand away from where the opening of the door is. And then, and the girl is saying, and the girl is saying, and then suddenly my inside started longing for him, a little late. So then I got up to open up for him, and what happened? My hands were now filled with the myrrh oil on the lock, because that's what he'd been holding on to. I had this little remnant of him from that. Patachti ani the dodi. So I opened up for him. Dodi chamakavar. What did he do? He ran away. Nafshi yatz'ah v'dabro, v'kashtiu v'lo mitzatiu, krativ v'lo anani. And I sought after him, and I couldn't find him. And this reminds us a little bit of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. If you recall, the first time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we hear about, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking to Moshe, v'yeira elav Adonai, and what happens? V'yaster Moshe panav. Moshe hides himself. Later on, they come back to the same scene, the Har Sinai. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? I'm going to put my hand over the cave, over the door, so nobody can see. Ki lo yirani hadam b'chai. Nobody can see me and live. And Moshe had said, Hareini nad kvodecha. I want to see you. This is wild Gemara that says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe and says, Kshiratziti lo ratzita. Achshav shani, shata rotze, eneni rotze. Beforehand, you wanted to see, I wanted to show myself to you, and you didn't want to see me. Now that you want to see me, I'm not ready. And it's this constant pull and push of a relationship which never finally makes it. And that's what seems to be happening here. And notice what the Midrash does with this Al Kapot HaManul. She reaches and she feels the oil. Now, when you have oil on a handle, you can't grab it. It slips off. So why is it called a man'ul? It's the Midrash. Wild says, Shemisham nin'al bifneihem shleikansu l'Eretz Yisrael. That's when they were prevented from coming to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they had an opportunity and they didn't come. What period is this talking about is unclear. But this is where the Rav builds up his entire piece of Kol Dodi Dofek, maybe in a more popular sense, the most well-known piece the Rav did. You know, Halachic Man, and man of The Lonely Man of Faith are perhaps his most famous pieces. But Kol Dodi Dofek was really his statement about the Shoah and about the Medina, and saying, this is an opportunity. The beloved is knocking on the door. We're saying, well, you know, I'm already... And it was that sort of attitude that he described. This is in the 50s, when it was not nearly as popular to talk about. And the Rav spoke that way.
What was his position? I'm not clear.
His position was not a specific directive. And the Rav certainly wasn't one who either himself or advocated abandoning American Jewry. But he was saying that Aliyah is something that everybody should consider seriously because this opportunity, you know, you kvetch for years. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, here, the door's open. He said, well, you know, right? I remember once seeing a sign, it's very cute. You know, when in New Jersey, when you go from town to town, when you enter the town, there's a little sign, welcome to, you know, the Rotary's Club, the whole thing, right? It was welcome to a particular town in New Jersey, which is well known as a bastion of modern Orthodoxy, and it said on the welcome sign, welcome to this town. We would all love to live in Israel, but, you know, Parnassa. It was on the sign on the thing. But, you know, and today, by the way, that becomes less of an excuse. But an interesting thing about Shir HaShirim is that Shir HaShirim is, besides being a love song between the individual and God, besides being a love song between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, besides being a panorama of Jewish history and a certain amount of Jewish eschatology about the future, there's also a strong component of a love song between Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, the land. If you look through, you'll see, we're going to see a few psukim, there's a little bit of a tour bus here in Shir HaShirim as you walk through.
You already walked through.
And some of it you see, En Gedi is mentioned here, and Tirzah is mentioned here. And take a look at this, though. We know that in Sefer Devarim, famously, the Torah describes Eretz Yisrael as having the bounty of seven species. Every one of them is mentioned, six of them are explicitly mentioned, and one of them is hinted to in Shir HaShirim. When he describes her, as Shorech Agana Sar Ayachar Mazeg Bitneich Arimat Chitim. Now, I don't know what kind of girl's going to like that description, that your stomach is like a pile of wheat, but in any case, Arimat Chitim. When he talks about, and interestingly, and this is like a hint, he talks about the girl, he talks about her hair, he talks about Sa'arech, which may be a hint to Sa'ora. Sa'ora is something we're not going to be so excited about because it's animal food. But, no question, and this will take us back to Sam, you remember the Weavers. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so one of the most famous Weaver song was Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, which of course is straight out of the beginning of Shir HaShirim, Ki Tovim Dodecha Miyayin. Right? Hateinach hantafagah, when saying that the season of summer is here, it's time for love, he says, Hateinach hantafagah, the fig tree has already come out with its first pagim, which in modern Hebrew there are primis, but pagim is like the young, unripe figs. He describes her head. Some way this is a praise, as being like a pomegranate. And by the way, what's shemen in Tanakh?
Oil.
Olive oil, right? There's the olives. And of course, the tamar is prominent in Shir HaShirim. And so the motif, all the motifs of Eretz Yisrael, and of course, what's Eretz Yisrael commonly called? We all grew up with this song. Eretz, Zavat Chalav Dvash. And right there in Shir HaShirim, Dvash V'Chalav, Tachat L'Shonech. So it's as if this is entirely a love song about Eretz Yisrael. Now, just want to bring this home because we're about to celebrate tonight. We're about to celebrate Medinat Yisrael, not Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, but Ribonut on Eretz Yisrael, the return, the rebuilding, the successful defense of, and the successful establishment of so many Arim and Moshavot and Yeshuvim and Kibbutzim throughout the land, unbelievable flourishing of success, just, you know, however we're going to regard it in meta-historic terms, historically it's an unbelievable thing. There's a component of Shir HaShirim that we have to keep in mind that I think is a measure of that success and a piece of that miracle, which is as follows. Passion at some point has to break through. It can't be restrained. What, and the Gemara tells us this, what did Jews do? We see it in Source 21. Rabbi Abba Menashe Kefi Da'ako. When Rabbi Abba would come to Eretz Yisrael, what would he do? And actually when he was leaving, he would kiss the rocks at the port. I remember seeing pictures of this and then hearing a wild story about it. In the old days in Lod, when you used to have to walk down the staircase, do you ever see it? People would get off the staircase and they'd kiss the ground. Now it's kind of hard because you never really hit the ground until much, much later and kind of the emotion's off. I remember hearing a story about a guy who was walking down the ladder. And it was an LL flight. It had to be an LL flight. He's walking down the ladder, and he turned to the stewardess, and he said, I want to kiss the ground. What do I do? And the stewardess, using a Mishnah Mikvot that she wasn't familiar with, said, well, the ladder touches the ground. So if you kiss the ladder, you're kissing the ground. And the guy kissed the ladder. But what does that mean? I want you to picture what it means. If you show this picture to somebody else, they'll think you're nuts. Here's a person, 50, 60, 80 years old, gets off the boat. And the first thing they do is fall on the ground and kiss the ground. It's crazy. You know what it is? It's unbridled passion. And it's unbridled passion that drove people to put up with everything and anything, to go through everything that they went through in order to drain swamps, to work all day and then stay up all night guarding against marauders, to build whatever infrastructure was necessary in order to finally make this land flourish. It was that kind of unbridled passion that's described here in Shir HaShirim. And just to end off with this note from the Kuzari, and here I put the translation down. Beharat bnei adam mitorutam el ahavat ha-makom ahu ha-kadosh yinachetz ha-inyan ha-miyuchal. You know when the gula is going to happen? And the gula is going to happen when people want it bad enough. When they were driven by such a desire, it's going to happen. I remember hearing an interesting story many years ago. That the Briskers, you know, are the ones who really expanded the yeshiva curriculum. You go to most yeshivot, what's studied? The Bavas and Gittin and Kiddushin and Ketubot. Right? There's certain standard masachtot that are learned, more advanced level, maybe Yivamot. You go to Brisk, what are they learning? They're learning Kodshim, right? So part of the idea was that if we engage ourselves in this study, and show HaKadosh Baruch Hu we really want to do this stuff, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to enable us to do it. And that was part of what drove Reb Chaim to spend much some of his time studying Zraim. Some of the energy that was used in Brisk was actually to study Zraim, which there's no Bavli on. So you had to find selected sugyot in the Bavli, and of course the Rambam, and Yerushalmi's here and there to study about Kilayim and Shemitah and Masrot and Truma, and lots of great Torah there, and part of the idea... What? Mitzvot HaTluyot Baretz. And Reb Chaim said if he could, he wanted to quit the Rabbanus and make Aliyah and buy a Pardes and fulfill all the Mitzvot HaTluyot Baretz. It's that kind of driving desire that isn't measured by, shall we say, rational decisions only, but also by just this burning love, which the Shir HaShirim is about. So Shir HaShirim is not only a song about the love between the individual and God, and Am Yisrael and God, and the Jewish history. It's also a love song between Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And the many descriptions in Shir HaShirim are also a bit of a blueprint of saying, if you want this relationship not to end with Barach Dodi, and every time you want to make it happen, the opportunity slips away, and every time the opportunity comes knocking, you're too tired to get out of bed, you've got to let that passion fly. And it's something that flew not only among individuals, but among whole communities, thousands and thousands of people who prepared the place for us, including 23,000 people whose memories we commemorate today, and so many more, hundreds of thousands of people who have worked so hard to help create the reality that we know has been Medinat Yisrael that we'll be celebrating tonight and tomorrow. So, Chag Sameach to everybody.